Welcome back to another edition of the Episcopal Herald podcast. My name is Dorota Pruski. I'm the associate priest at St. Andrew's Episcopal Church in Madison, Wisconsin, and I'm here with some friends talking about church planting and church revitalization. So I'll give you an opportunity to introduce yourselves to all those listeners out there.
Hi, I'm Jim Hamilton. I'm the church planter at Church on the Square in Baltimore City.
And I'm Stephanie Spellers. I teach mission and evangelism at General Theological Seminary, and I'm also a senior consultant for the Center for Progressive Renewal, which is an ecumenical group that works around church planting and revitalization throughout the mainline denominational universe.
And you've been a church planter.
And I was a church planter with the community called The Crossing in Boston. And so church planting is incredibly dear to my heart.
Awesome. Well, thank you both for being here.
Thanks for inviting us.
Yeah. So for all those out there who hear church planting and don't have an imagination for what that actually looks like because they've not been a part of one, they haven't seen one, they like the idea of it, but they don't even know where to begin in an imagination of it, I'm wondering if you can just share, fill in a picture with a story or two about what it is that we're talking about when we're talking about church planting, maybe from your experience or your context or friends of yours that are doing this work that you find particularly meaningful.
Yeah.
I wonder if Stephanie would, I think that it begins with listening and seeing where the Spirit is moving in the community, someplace that's not being served, someplace where there isn't a lot of energy around the Spirit and there are people that in there that are in need. Would you say that's sort of the beginning, sort of find out where those places are in your diocese?
Yeah. And I think what's really important to notice, too, is not only where is the Spirit not necessarily really flowing, but in many cases, where is the Spirit flowing in a community, but we don't have a church presence?
Mm-hmm.
So where is there something that we can join up with?
Yeah.
We talk about joining God.
Yeah.
You know, the idea that actually, honey, God has already gone out there.
Right.
God is working stuff out. God is in that yoga studio. God is at that coffee house.
Right.
God is with that group of parents who get together on Saturdays and create their own school, you know, and community experience. The question is not how do we bring God to them anymore and how do we plant a church in, you know, like where they can finally know God. It's actually how can we partner with some of these communities and create worship and sacramental and just community experiences that grow the life of God even bigger.
Mm-hmm.
And frankly, that bless us as church, you know, and that tell us, oh, church could be that. I didn't know that.
Right. So not just finding the gaps, but
yeah.
Finding where there's expressions of grace in those gaps.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I think the simple fact is that in the Episcopal Church, we haven't had a big church planting movement in, what, like 50, 60 years. And so the culture has shifted, life has shifted, everything has shifted so much. And we're still working with a lot of the same models, the same shape of church.
Yeah.
And kind of tinkering with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think with church planting, we get the opportunity to do, and I'm saying this in the purely technical term, the leapfrog, where you're like, all right, you need some folks who are doing the work of revitalization, where they're working with existing congregations to help them to do that beautiful, slower, adaptive work. But you also need folks who can say, all right, we're going to leap. We're going to bring our Episcopal traditions and gifts and blessings with us, but we're going to leap and we're going to dive into existing just cultures, emerging communities, and say, hey, can we join you and be church together?
Yeah, affectionately call that the parachute drop.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
Yeah. The parachute what?
Parachute drop.
Oh, parachute.
Sort of.
Yeah.
Sort of. But that's kind of a sort of like more derogatory, right? Yeah.
So what does that look like? Do you, you know, walk into a yoga studio swinging a thruple and saying, God is here, and I'm blessing this, and we're church?
And everybody starts coughing. What the heck is that incense? Jim is like one of the most gifted people I know at entering a community, discovering where God is moving. So I'm going to ask.
Like I said before,
I'm going to turn
to you. Go in there and you listen. I mean, I spent a year before I even started to imagine what the service would look like, how we were going to be worshiping, when we'd be worshiping. I just sat and talked to people. There was times in coffee shops and in bars. But more directly, I found, like Stephanie was saying, I found the kind of organizations that were doing excellent work in the neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked them to tell me stories about what they were seeing in the neighborhood, where people were moving into, why they were leaving sometimes. You know, why? What was their fear? In my neighborhood, there's a real fear of the racial diversity that is burgeoning, and a sense of being a priest in that transition time became a pretty early on understanding of what my priesthood would be for that neighborhood. And so if you're going to be a true parochial church, a church for the parish, you need to know the people you're serving, and not the people that walk through the doors of your church.
The
people actually that might never walk through the doors of your church, so you need to meet them. And so I put myself in myriad situations where I can listen to what's going on and feel the heartbeat of the community.
Yeah, like you told me, like you, within months, you were already on like the board for this, the council for that. Mm-hmm. I mean, just showing up.
Yeah, you just kind of show up. And you realize that, especially in a lot of these communities that don't have a voice that is culminating all their energy and fear and hope, that there is no leader that's doing this yet.
Yeah.
I mean, that's part of what you figure out. And so when you walk in the door, there's been a dearth of that energy, and so they are so excited to see you. So you're not persuading them to give you a place at the table. They are eager. They're chomping at the bit to have someone say, I'm going to lend a little bit of grace, or oftentimes I just allow people to talk and curate conversations. I mean, several times already I've had different business owners or the city councilmen, they get into little fights, and then they call me, because I'm the chaplain of the neighborhood.
Isn't that amazing?
And so that, you know, that behavior comes from me building a trust net, that they can say, this person is, he's good at keeping confidentiality, he treats us with respect, and he bridges gaps when people have disagreements. And so that's the kind of church that I think is really effective in this new parochial style. Well, new old parochial style.
Well, and part of what I hear Jim describing is how important context is. You know, that some people think that church planting is one picture. They have one picture of a church planting.
Right.
They're like, oh, okay, so you want to have this like super funky, groovy, cool, you know, group of young adults, and it's going to be, you know, like 50 young adults gathered in a circle, you know, in a cathedral at the altar, high the crossing, you know, and, you know, like a bassist and this and that, and, you know, lay people are doing the preaching, and when people would come to the crossing, they'd be like, okay, how do we do this? I'm like, don't ever ask that question. Don't try to go and do what we're doing. This came, what you were experiencing in worship and in community and in formation and in action in this community is directly linked to the voice and the experience of people where we are. You go listen. Like, you know, like the way that Jim is describing, the way that he's been listening in Canton, you know, that area of Baltimore. Like, you go listen and find out, how are people connecting? How are they not connecting? Where are the places where they need some grace? Where are the places where they're finding grace? And then what is the shape of Christian community that expresses the gospel in that context? Down in Texas, you know, there are folks who have got, you know, like church plants that have like 600 members within a few years in a building. And my thing is, in that context, that makes perfect sense.
Sure.
There are a lot of families. There are a lot of people who will drive from further away. And so you can kind of create this magnet experience. New York City, where I live, you'd have to do that based on train lines. You know?
Sure.
So it's just, I mean, I feel like part of what we have to understand is, if we're waiting for one expression of church or of a church plant, of new church, to be the one, that's not going to work. It's all about mixed economy.
Yeah.
It's all about making room for a variety of ways of living the gospel in the Anglican and Episcopal way.
Yeah. And it sounds like what you're describing is so relational.
Yeah.
It's saying, you have things to teach me about Christ, and so I come as one who's learning, as you are, as we build this thing together.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering, what kinds of things have you learned about the life of faith from the people that you've served as a priest?
Ooh.
Well, I think we have a prescribed list of things that when we're invited into their lives. Sacramental lists. This is when you are put on the collar, you become the priest. And what I'm learning is that the way I'm intersecting with the lives of the people in my community is in the nooks and crannies, in the cracks between those things. And they're asking for, because they're usually non-church or de-church people, they don't know what's expected of me. And so, on the one hand, if I have someone that has been de-churched from being a Catholic from when he was just a kid, I did my second, and I'd never done one of these in any traditional Episcopal church, my second confession, and it was so powerful because this gentleman said, I haven't done this since I was seven.
Yeah.
You know, and so he doesn't know that that's not part of our tradition to necessarily do those individual confessions that much anymore. But for him, he claimed it and said, this is what I need. And another similar reality is that there was a woman who, there was a memorial service that was happening that she couldn't get to for her grandmother. And we created something special just for her. We catered some worship service, some prayer time together. And it wasn't mandated as being part of that experience, but it was an opportunity for her to say that her specific faith journey, her grief, was all going to be loved inside of this new family that she's found. And afterwards, the next day, she said, I need to make sure that I do everything I can to make the feeling that I felt yesterday available to everyone in this neighborhood.
Mm. Wow, that's powerful.
Yeah.
I think probably the most amazing experience I had like that as a priest on the ground, like doing church planting, was when we were figuring out whether or not to do Eucharist at the crossing, because some of the common wisdom at the time, and like this was like 10 years ago, but the common wisdom at the time was, well, don't do communion because it's alienating for the former Roman Catholics, and the evangelicals don't know what it is, so just don't do that. So I was kind of thinking, okay, and like we'll avoid that. And what ended up happening was a lot of people who were not from an Episcopal or even necessarily a strong Christian background were saying, you know, that thing that you guys do, like, can we do that? Can we do Eucharist? And I'm like, well, of course we can. Like, I wish we could. I thought that people wouldn't want that. And they're like, actually, no. And but then they said, but please don't do it reading it out of that book. Like, they're like, if we do this, it needs to be as authentic and to rise, you know, from, again, the discernment of, you know, of the wisdom between the tradition and the streets. Like, that Eucharist needs to be shaped the same way that everything else in our worship is shaped. So so they ended up saying to me, we need you to do extemporaneous Eucharistic prayers. I'm like, what? Like, but we don't do that. And they're like, well, why not? Like, you've been trained. Like, my community, most of whom were not Episcopal, were saying to me, well, you've been trained, and you believe that the Spirit is here, and all this, so why can't you do that? I'm like, okay. So they convinced me that was, and I'm telling you, Eucharist from then on was the heart of our community. And people who had never been a part of an Episcopal community, or even a Eucharistic church, were coming and crying in that circle as we would share communion. And they, like, reminded me. They kind of recalled for me, revealed for me what's possible, what's actually happening in that Eucharist. They made me more of a sacramental Christian, I think, than I was before I met them.
Wow.
So, like, if I had been stuck on, well, I'm the one who knows, and whatever, like, I don't think we would have come nearly as deep or approached it nearly as profoundly as they went. They took me there.
I think maybe your listeners, if they've heard it already, and Stephanie, I want to tease it out some more, is that developing a culture where the priest not only listens, but respects what they're listening to. So, I mean, I think we said already that you listen, but you listen, and then you literally are transformed by the information that you receive from that other person. And I think that it would behoove whoever is doing this work to imagine how they can create an infrastructure that would allow for that to happen. So, I mean, in our particular context, what I did is I brought two people with me, and instead of creating a hierarchy within the leadership structure of who we have in our church, I said, let's equalize that out. So me as pastoral missioner, my friend John Rapolsky as arts missioner, my other friend John Deason as development missioner, we each have sort of equal vote in making decisions of what's going on. Now, that's a power abdication thing for me, because within the context of both the church that I serve, the Episcopal Church, and also the Lutheran Church, which is a joint project, I could claim my authority in those two systems.
Yeah.
And instead of doing that, I relinquish that authority to prove to the people that are coming into the church to say, this is the kind of egalitarian world in which your voice is valuable. Not when you are educated, not when you've gotten to a certain point in this process that, you know, has a stamp of approval that you have now the right to say something. But just as I hand them the gospel to read, and I've gotten my bishop's permission to do this, you know, just as I hand them the words to hold, and some of them say, I don't really know the Bible or read the Bible. I said, do you feel comfortable reading? I said, I can try. And so they get to put in their words faith and try it out first and figure out what it means for them as they move through this journey. And they've been given the baton, you know, the metaphorical baton, the spirit stick to say, you know, it's your turn to talk.
Well, and that's, I think if there's anything that I hope that people understand from those of us who are really passionate about church planting, it's not about creative worship. It's actually about discipleship. And it's about finding ways to build relationship with people that the church would not have been in relationship otherwise, so that together we can follow Jesus together into the neighborhood and travel lightly. You know, that mantra from this convention, you know, that if people think it's that we're tired of or bored with church the way it's been and now we want something better, or that we want to shove aside that generation and step out and do our own thing, like, this is so much deeper than that. And it's actually, if anything, we want to help to return these beautiful traditions to their vitality in contexts where right now they don't speak. But what we believe is that given the opportunity to speak, given the opportunity you know, to be present in these different contexts, that the Episcopal way shines and that people meet Jesus in that way. But we have to listen to them. It has to be mutual. It can't be the old ways. And we cannot sit waiting for them to discover how awesome we are.
I mean, that's the whole problem. Yeah. When Stephanie is speaking to this, and I found this mistake myself. I think a lot of church planters have to do that first. They're like, let's do a super cool, spooky, ooky service with candles and chant, and it's going to be ancient, future, and awesome. Like, and then what you get is you get a whole bunch of church nerds coming, and we love the church nerds. They're great, and they want to find a place that is doing really itchy, cool stuff. But they're leaders that are already finding their place. And so really, the previous plant that I did was a lovely time, but really what it did was it was a hothouse for leaders that have gone on to do other things. It wasn't meant to have intergenerational worship, transformative for the community, that would be lasting and create a home for those that are in need of that kind of a house for prayer and worship. And so, if you truly want to do a church plant, I'm saying there's other things you can do that are just interesting and creative, and you should do those things. But if you want to create a sense where you're building a community of faith that can usher in, you know, renewal and hope and grace and love into a neighborhood, then you have to think about more than just worship.
I think that's really amazing and really powerful, and speaks to what especially those of us who are still in traditional context forget about what's so rich about what the church is and what it can be. And I'm wondering, for those who, and this will maybe be the note that we end on, for those who listen to this and are really excited about it and find themselves in a traditional context, perhaps in a neighborhood where they aren't reaching their local community anyway because they've been relying on those who come from wherever, is there wisdom in what you are describing for those who are in small or declining churches, or are we truly talking about two totally different ways of doing ministry?
I have some experience in this too, since I was in a small church that I came into as 3/4 time and was given some indication that it didn't have much longevity to it, that there was some problems in the church. When I walked in, I realized that they were a church of people that had come to this remote location to lift their wounds from being hurt by other churches. And so they'd created this really insular bubble of a community that was actually good for them, but it was not healthy, or was it outreaching? And when they talked about outreach, they thought it meant helping poor people that were an hour and a half away.
Yep.
And so I asked them, had they ever walked their neighborhood? Did they know their actual neighbors? Had they been to the high school, the elementary school that were literally their next door neighbors, and they had never done any of that work because no one had ever challenged them to do so. Because the idea of church at the time was a place to congregate to, right? It was this flame that moths that knew that they were Episcopal moths would come at the appropriate time, right? And so, and that's not to say that they weren't vibrant in their time, but they had never been on city council, they didn't know what was happening in the police department, they didn't reach out to their neighboring churches, and they didn't know who their actual neighbors were. And so the work that I did was fairly small, baby steps into their community. And literally, we went to the elementary school. It's really almost about as far as we went. I walked the neighborhood a couple times, and I invited people to come with me, and they never did, because it was scary. It's very scary. And the church grew pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. I left it way better than I found it, and it's continuing to grow because they've gotten this bug. It's a simple formula. Go out and listen. Be among. You know, don't bring an agenda. Listen. And I think it's another way of saying, go into the neighborhood and travel lightly is travel without your expectations of what they want you to be or do. Don't ask them, you know, as soon as you meet them, say that we've got Sunday school. Just say, tell me more about your story. What's important and valuable to you? And not even, don't even have a solution to that. You're not there to solve their problems. You're there to listen to them and love them and be with them because they are your neighbors. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, awesome.
Amen.
Amen. Today I do a lot of work both with churches and that are wanting to do the work of renewal and with new church plants. And the tools are often the same. I mean, there's definitely big differences, but that essential call to, and again, it's a thing we hear over and over in this convention, and I hope that people and their diocese congregations will continue to mull over is that follow Jesus together into the neighborhood, travel lightly. That a church that is wanting to experience renewal and revival, if they are following that same pattern of first of all figuring out how will we follow Jesus together? In other words, how will we truly become a Christian community of people who love them some Jesus? Unabashedly. And so that's stage one, I feel like. And that's stage one for a new church. Mm-hmm. You know, when I've coached new church planters, been like, so what is Jesus inviting you into? And they're like, well, I've got this idea. It's like,
nope.
That's not what I asked
nope.
you. That's not what I asked you. What is Jesus up to? What is the Holy Spirit mm-hmm. up to? How will you follow Jesus together? So that's first. But for a church that's really kind of like spun down and experiencing decline, if you ask them, where is Jesus? Not always, but quite often what they'll say is we kind of lost track of him. It became about us. It became about the club. It became about being kind of a civic organization, and we kind of forgot Jesus. So starting there is the same for both. Into the neighborhood, again, same for both. You know, I'm coaching like several suburban churches,
yeah.
you know, that are down to like, you know, 40 or so people. And they're like, we know we have to renew. We want to coach. So I'm working with them. And I've got them doing neighborhood walks, prayer walks. I've got them doing everything that Jim was just talking about. They're doing demographic studies to say, oh, that's who's around us now.
Know
your neighbor. Love your neighbor. But first you have to know your neighbor to love your neighbor. But go into the neighborhood. And then when you go, travel lightly. Like, travel lightly. Bring love. Share blessing. It's Luke 10 all over, you know, but don't carry that extra tunic and the staff and the money and the this and the that and your bin full of prayer books with vestments and everything
yeah.
else. You're like, you may need that and you may not. They may have something to offer. And if your hands are so full of everything that you love, you'll never be able to receive what they love and to receive the blessing from them. So that's the travel lightly.
So no Thurible?
I think Thurible's rock.
They might want it.
It's like, we bring some
yeah.
stuff,
yeah.
just not everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. Discernment.
I want to reiterate that we literally mean physically going out. Like, I mean, I think that oftentimes, like literally, if you're sitting in your office listening to this right now, get up off your behind and walk out the door.
Do, 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 do.
I mean, this does not mean, it's not an intellectual exercise.
Yeah, it's not
it's a physical exercise. Yep. It is go and do it. And invite people in your congregation to go and do it. And help them feel confident to go and do it. Go and do. Now.
Amen.
Okay.
That is the note to end on. So go and do. Thank you, Jim. Thank you, Stephanie.
Thank you.
And thank you all for listening.